Good morning. The Grassroot Institute of Hawaii has some serious questions about the Department of the Interior's proposal regarding Native Hawaiian government. We'll hear from Dr. Kaili'i Akina. And Neil Conan looks at an increase in saber rattling in the Mediterranean and wonders just what Russia is up to. I'm Chris Vanderkook.
And I'm Kathy Kozak. What does it take to compete in the Miss Hawaii USA pageant? We'll talk to contestant Michelle Targonsky about the behind-the-scenes preparation involved. And helping Hawaii's furry friends, we'll talk to Denby Dung about her work to help animals be adopted with the Pet Hui.
On Tuesday, October 6th, stay with us for The Conversation, right after the news.
Listening to The Conversation, I'm Kathy Kozak, filling in for Beth Ann Kozlovich this week. You know, Chris, we have some interesting discussions about politics, both internationally and here at home today.
That's right. We're going to jump right in on it because there's quite a bit in the air these days. Should the Native Hawaiian community be treated as a single entity? That's how it's described in the Department of the Interior's recent proposal for the creation of a Native Hawaiian government. Does the department have the authority to make such a proposal? Dr. Kaili'i Akina, President and CEO of Grassroot Institute of Hawaii, raises those questions and others, and he's here with us this morning. Good morning, Kaili'i.
Well, good morning, Chris. Always glad to be on Hawaii Public Radio.
Let's set the stage. What just happened? What's the substance of what just happened in the Department of the Interior?
Well, basically, the Department of the Interior issued a news release.
Right.
And just to summarize it very briefly, they're saying that they're willing to issue some rules to acknowledge a Native Hawaiian government. But it's very important. They say they're not going to set up a government of Native Hawaiians. But if the Hawaiian community, and they use that term, if the Hawaiian community sets up a government, they'll acknowledge it.
And right there, that's different from the Akaka bill, which actually made it something that was generated from the federal side.
That's right, Chris. In fact, what the Department of Interior is saying is really not news. The federal government doesn't set up other foreign governments. And in this news release, they're actually saying all they're going to do is acknowledge any government that's set up by Hawaiians. But as you point out, this is different from the Akaka bill. The Akaka bill was much more aggressive. It said the federal government shall set up Hawaiians as a federally recognized Indian tribe.
And was shot down.
It was.
For that reason.
In fact, the motions that are being made by the Department of Interior look like an end run around the Constitution of the United States, because the Supreme Court has already weighed in through a case called Rice v. Cayetano. The Congress has weighed in by not passing the Akaka bill in a period of about 15 years. So we've got the judicial, we've got the congressional, and now it looks like the executive branch is trying to do something to foster a Native Hawaiian government.
Well, Kaili'i, are you saying on that basis that it's just not going to happen?
Well, you know, in the world in which
we
live, it's not a safe thing to say nothing will happen and all things are impossible. But I can say this. It's clearly not constitutional. We have to understand that we have a government that has established checks and balances and proper roles for the different branches of government. The executive branch simply doesn't have the power to recognize foreign nations and so forth. This is something that is for the Congress to do. So there's something amiss about this, but there's something deeper, a problem you raised in the question you asked at the beginning.
Well, Kaili'i, when you say we have a government, some people are going to say, who's we? Particularly Hawaiians are going to say, wait a minute, you're not talking about me.
Well, there are some individuals who have every right under the First Amendment to protest and reject the government of the United States of America and the Constitution. They have a constitutional right to say that they're not part of that.
Somewhat ironically. Yeah.
But the reality is we the people represent all of us, and most of us together, even part Native Hawaiians and Native Hawaiians, have no problem whatsoever being proud of being Hawaiian and being proud of being American. In fact, a recent effort done at the state level to try to enlist and enroll Native Hawaiians in a governmental effort called the Native Hawaiian Roll Commission simply fell flat. They started by targeting over 500,000 Native Hawaiians across the United States. Less than 20% of them were even interested in signing up. And we've exposed the fact that a good number of those had their names put on the list without their permission. If that's a good poll, we can see clearly that most Native Hawaiians, who are also something else, Chinese, Japanese, Caucasian, and so forth, are not interested in establishing a separate government.
Enough are, Kili'i, that I can hear some of the things you're saying to me. I can just hear howls of protest in response, that there's an awful lot of energy directed towards some form of a Native Hawaiian government. And you sound as if you're sort of rejecting it out of hand, saying it's just not, there is no realistic mechanism for such a thing to be done.
Well, first of all, no, I don't disrespect the right of individuals under the First Amendment to protest or to envision different forms of government. And you are correct. There are individuals who are doing this. What I am pointing out is simply this. The numbers do not show that they represent a majority. There are voices that speak many different messages. For example, opposition to the 30-meter telescope or other protests. But to say just because they are loud voices, just because they are in the media, just because they make a certain amount of noise, that they represent the Native Hawaiian people would be a huge logical error. And any numerical measurement of the Native Hawaiian people shows that there is no one single consensus.
Well, you're not saying that you are either, obviously, but how would one even determine such a thing? Who is a spokesperson? What is the community?
Well, that's a great question. And I'd go back one step even before that and ask, is there a spokesperson? Is there a community of Native Hawaiians who can be represented with one voice? And the answer is that we are diverse as all the people in Native in Hawaii. A trustee in the Office of Hawaiian Affairs gave me the opportunity to interview him once. And he turned to me in the break and he said, you know, Kili'i, most of us Hawaiians are mostly something else. We Native Hawaiians span the spectrum politically. We are Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Libertarians. We span the spectrum socially, economically, educationally. Part of the problem of what the Department of Interior is proposing is that there's one group that can be put into one governmental administration. I think that anybody who has a drop of Native Hawaiian should be frightened by this. Imagine this, if you had a drop of Filipino blood or Dutch blood or German blood, and the government said, we're going to establish a federally recognized administration for everybody who has a drop of this blood, and your relationship with the government will be defined through this, and you will be spoken for by leaders of this administration, we would be up in arms, and we would see that that's not something good and empowering, but that's something that limits us in terms of the Constitution.
That's how you're defining the so-called government-to-government relationship. What you're seeing is that it just sort of adds another layer of government nonsense to the existing government nonsense.
Well, it absolutely does, and it does so on the premise that anybody with a drop of Hawaiian blood is part of a group. I think that this denies the individual liberties that the Bill of Rights stands for. Hawaiians have been participants in all political parties. Hawaiians have been on both sides of the argument should there be a restoration of a Native Hawaiian government. But for our federal government to take a hand in defining this is something that takes away the process of democracy.
Kili'i, I have a feeling that this is a discussion we haven't entirely wrapped up at this moment, that it's ongoing. But I thank you very much for bringing your perspective in this morning.
Well, Well, much aloha to you and the listeners of Hawaii Public Radio.
I appreciate it. Dr. Kali'i Akina is the president and CEO of the Grassroot Institute of Hawaii, and you can link to his printed response to the Department of Interior proposal on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page. This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2. It is 8:16 on the nose, and later in the show, inside the changing world of the pageant, leaving behind the image of the beauty contest. But first, your quiz.
Umulokai, ulanai, umau, ukaholave, ohavai.
In today's backyard quiz, we're taking a look at an oddly named crustacean species that was recently found in the waters surrounding Hawaii. During a research expedition that traveled to remote coral reef systems in Raja Ampat, Indonesia, Dr. James Thomas from the Halmos College of Natural Sciences and Oceanography in Florida and his colleagues from the Naturalis Natural Museum in the Netherlands came across a small crustacean living inside another reef invertebrate. Though it might seem a little strange, Dr. Thomas named the species after musician and actor Sir Elton John. In his words, quote, "I named the species in honor of Sir Elton John because I've listened to his music in my lab during my entire scientific career. So when this unusual crustacean with a greatly enlarged appendage appeared under my microscope after a day of collecting, an image of the shoes Sir Elton John wore as pinball wizard came to mind." Discovered initially on Indonesia, the crustacean has been spotted in areas like Kaneohe Bay and is currently considered an invasive species. For today's quiz, we want you to tell us the full scientific name of the Elton John crustacean species recently found in Hawaii. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets an HPR t-shirt.
Hi, good morning. I'm Reverend Dan Werning from the Hawaii Sacred Choir. You're listening to member-supported HPR2, live on the web at hawaiipublicradio.org.
We've all seen the end results, the beautiful contestants walking across the stage, but there's a lot more preparation than most people realize that goes into the Miss Hawaii USA pageant. Michelle Targonsky, Miss Diamondhead USA, is here to tell us more about the fitness training, interview coaching, talent practice, and how grueling the entire competition truly is behind the scenes and out of the spotlight. Michelle, welcome to The Conversation.
Hi, good morning.
Now, you started dancing before most kids could walk.
Yes, I started dancing at 18 months and started competing around the nation at 5 years old.
Your mom had a dance studio, and so you just kind of absorbed what you saw around you.
Correct. My mom and my grandma both owned dance studios, so I always grew up in the world of dance.
And that sort of is what took you competing at age five to become one of the national finalists for Dancer of the Year.
Yes, exactly. In 2009, I actually ran for Dancer of the Year and got the top 20 national finalists for Dancer of the Year.
So dance is one of the talents that you clearly have from a very, very young age. What are some of the other elements of what it takes when you're competing in a beauty pageant or a competition? In addition to the dance, what else do you do to prepare?
There's a lot of steps it takes to prepare for a pageant. I definitely think dedication is the first thing, is you have to devote a lot of time and you have to really want it. You have to learn about yourself. I've been sitting down almost every day with Nancy Bernal, coaching me, helping me with my interview, helping me actually discover a lot about myself, figuring out what I really like, my passions, and where I want to go with my life. I've also been training at the Art of Fitness with Ray Sagum, and every day I'm in there, you know, trying to build my figure a little better and watching what I'm eating. So it takes a lot of work, a lot of dedication, and I don't know, I love every second of it. It's a great experience.
So how far ahead did you start preparing for Miss Diamondhead USA? I mean, I just gather that you don't just fill out a form and say, hey, I'll try it this year and just start competing. You've really got to put a lot of thought and effort and preparation into this.
Yes, I competed for my first pageant last year, and it opened my eyes to the world of pageantry, and I got really excited. It was such an incredible feeling, I don't know, being on the stage and being able to help others just through finding myself. So I don't know. I wanted to step in one more time and try again. So when I found the Miss USA pageant, I decided to run for Miss USA.
And what is it that you want to do? If you were to be our Miss USA, what sort of, they always describe, what is your platform? How do you want to reach those people who are out in the United States who might be listening to what you have to say and looking at you as a mentor?
Right now, my ultimate goal is to spread Aloha spirit. Hawaii has blessed me with so much, and I want to show the world the uniqueness that Hawaii has to offer.
So part of being in this pageant is to help share your aloha with your fellow contestants, and you want to take that a step further.
Correct.
Now, some of the activities that you're doing now, you've got a fairly busy life. You do the fitness training, you do all the other activities, interview coaching, etc. But you're also in a show in Waikiki.
Yes, I dance in the Burning Love Show in the Magic of Polynesia showroom at 8 p.m. It's 6 nights a week. It's one of the most amazing jobs I've ever had in my entire life. It's a high energy show. Excuse me. There's a full band, 6 dancers. He's a backup singer. Leo Days is our headliner. He's Elvis Presley. He is absolutely amazing. It's about Elvis's time in Hawaii and kind of the Hawaii influence on Elvis and his career.
Somebody else who shared aloha with the rest of the U.S. at the height of his career, and it's sort of part of what you want to do as well. How difficult is it to be doing high-energy dancing 6 days a week? I can't even imagine it one day a week, and yet this is something you have to do for several hours, 6 days a week.
I love dancing. I always found myself in the dance room since I was 18 months. I was there. If I wasn't dancing myself, I was teaching, I was taking classes, I was watching classes. I was even eating dinner and doing homework on the side of the dance room floor. So I find it you build a stamina for it, so it doesn't get as tiring, but it definitely is a good workout.
I bet it is. Now, you're also teaching kids dance now as well. In addition to doing the performances, you also teach as well. Is that right?
Yes, I teach in Kaimuki at the Movement Center.
So what do you find helps when, can you identify a future dancer in the classes? I mean, can you see a little mini you when you were young in some of those classes? And what is it? What is it that you notice that makes you think that person's got it?
You can always see when a kid has potential. It's their drive. It's their willingness or their want to learn, their crave for your attention, for your approval. When they're at home, they're practicing themselves, and they come in the next day and they say, hey, Miss Michelle, look at what I can do. So you can tell when kids have it, but I think that anyone who can move their body can be a dancer, so there's no reason not to try it.
At any age?
Right, at any age. I teach from ages 2 all the way up to adults. There's an adult TAF class that I taught last year.
I have a feeling that you have just met 2 left feet hello, maybe I should join your class.
Yeah, and, come try it out.
Yeah, show you how bad some people really could be at that. But it sounds like really what you found the most is that it's really more about having the motivation and the drive.
Yes, definitely.
So if you have that and you want to continue, there's a way that you will be able to practice and keep going. And that's part of what's brought you to where you're at now.
Yes, yeah. I think that if you have a motivation for anything, you can, you know, set your mind to it and you'll be able to achieve it.
You have yet to meet your most challenging dance student in your studio, but I'll give you that. All right. Well, I thank you for joining us today and telling us more about what it takes to get into a pageant. It's not just as easy as most people think. And also how hopefully dance will help you to share the aloha with people all across the U.S. Good luck in the pageant.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being on. Michelle Targonsky is a professional dancer who started competing at the age of 5 after starting dancing at 18 months in her mom and grandmother's studio. She was a national finalist in ranking for the Dancer of the Year in 2009, and she's on stage nightly with the Burning Love Waikiki Show and will take part in the Miss Hawaii USA pageant this November at the Convention Center.
Astronaut Chris Hadfield tells us how much fun it is to live weightless on the International Space Station.
You can fly, you can float, you can tumble, you can move around just on your fingertips.
Hear why the guitar is so important to the culture of Spain.
The guitar is evoking somehow, you know, the spirit of Spain, absolutely.
And explore America's dog-loving culture on a cross-country road trip on The Next Travel with Rick Steves.
This afternoon at 4, following Fresh Air.
When it comes to HPR's pledge drives, it's not a matter of if we reach our goal, it's when. More contributions received now mean fewer to be raised on the air later. Mahalo to Alice Kawakami of Kaneohe, Virginia Jones of Kailua, and Sumner Lacroix of Honolulu. Thank you for your early gifts. Let's make good time on the fall drive. Become a fall first-time giver at the $10 a month sustaining member level. Call 955-8821 during business hours or give online at hawaiipublicradio.org. The word local is fraught with meaning here in Hawaii, meaning different things to different people. Were you born here? If not, how long have you lived here? Where'd you go to high school? What's it like for local people to live on the mainland? Civil Beat is taking a look at the many shades of meaning at work here, and Assistant Editor Eric Pape is on the line to tell us more. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
This is a, you know, a subject that's frequently discussed, but never in a lot of detail. You guys are burrowing a little deeper than usual, yeah?
Yeah, we are. I mean, this is a very important topic. It touches on so many different intertwining things that make Hawaii what it is. And mm-hmm. Our fundamental question here is, what does it mean to be of or from Hawaii? And given how many people have moved here and live here, for them, what is it like to be not of or from Hawaii in some cases? But
well,
it touches, the issue touches on ethnicity, race, the rich history of the islands, class issues, local neighborhood issues. So there's a lot to get at, and we think it's really important.
Well, what are you coming up with? What are some of the common threads that you're finding?
Well, so we launched this with a talk with Ben Cayetano. We went and did an interview up at his house. And he just struck me as someone who was extremely local, and given the breadth of his experiences in life, I thought he would have some fascinating things to say, and he did. And for him, it's fundamentally an attitude, and he really lays that out in the podcast we did then that was followed up by David Morgan, who wrote a piece that went pretty viral, in fact. It got enormous readership, and it still is. And that one is about, it's called So How Long Have You Been in the Islands? And it's the experience of a Howley from Florida who moved here, thrived basically for about 7 years, excuse me, and then ultimately left, even though he loves the islands. And he left because he just didn't quite feel local. He went back to a place where he felt at home, where he was connected to people on another level.
Well, evidently, Eric, he didn't have the attitude that Governor Cayetano described to you, but what was that attitude?
David Morgan's attitude was...
Governor Cayetano, you said that Governor Cayetano said it was mostly a matter of attitude. How would you describe that?
It's about feeling the place and being of this place fundamentally. He told some wonderful stories as a kid about what he thought local was, and for him it didn't matter. The color or shade of your skin wasn't an issue. He talked about a Russian kid, a white Russian kid that he grew up with, who was as local as anyone else, who spoke pidgin like everyone else in his neighborhood, and that guy was local, so it wasn't about the ethnic background side. But he goes through a whole array of different pretty fascinating stories and explanations about it. I really encourage people to listen to that.
Well, I would think that speaking pidgin would be a big part of it, yeah?
I think at one time it certainly was. I think nowadays, and this is part of the fascinating thing, everyone seems to have a different definition of what local is. For some people it's a specific ethnic mix, non-Howley. For some people it's if you were born here. For some people, it's just if you pick up the feel of the place. And I think fundamentally in the end, I think Ben Cayetano comes down there. That you could come here and not be here so long, and yet you can still become local. Whereas if someone else might be here for a long time, and they just don't quite get it. They don't get the feel.
Well, there's hope for us all, Eric. Thanks very much for talking with us this morning.
Thanks, Chris.
Eric Pape is the Special Projects and Innovations Editor for CivilBeat.com.
Support for the conversation comes from the College of Business at Hawaii Pacific University, whose MBA Flex Plus program offers a blend of classroom and online classes to fit the lives of working professionals. hpu.edu/business.
Our correspondent Neil Conan keeps an eye on far-off events from his Macnut farm in Hawaii because he knows they have a way of affecting us all. As Russia steps up its military involvement in Syria with a call for so-called volunteers and millions flee the country, he wonders where it all might be headed. He's on the phone with us from Hawaii Island. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning, Chris. You guys over there on Oahu may have dodged Oahu, but we had a pretty wild night over here.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I hope you've recovered.
I think we're all ready.
Well, you know, in these sort of provocations are near provocations in the Mediterranean with a Russian fleet in place, as you say, volunteers being... looking as if Russia is going to get involved on the ground in there. These are pretty ominous signs, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, Chris. A week ago, we talked about Russian aircraft as they started combat missions.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, volunteers are heading over to Syria. But the most troubling thing is these two incidents over the weekend when Russian planes flew into Turkish airspace. Now, NATO says, because there were two incidents and because they lasted a long time, they don't see this as an accident. That's what the Russians say. Russian planes, as you know, have been much more aggressive in the past couple of years in many areas, buzzing American warships in the Black Sea, probing into Norway and the UK. And if that's what they're doing in Turkey, it's a very dangerous game. Now, Turkey did shoot down a Syrian jet last year. It's awfully unclear that they would be willing to do the same with Russia, which is a completely different ballgame. But at least right now, they're talking tough.
Well, but these incidents, and, you know, there's this whole sort of constant flow around the world of near incidents that we don't ever hear about, but there are lots of lots of gamesmanship, games of nuclear chicken among warplanes flying over around the world. It looks as if the Soviets are quite willing to play that game.
They're Russians now these days, Chris.
That's right. Yeah,
like Soviets, but
yeah, right.
They are the Russian Federation.
My bad.
That's what quarter century or so. You're right. These provocations are. It's not quite nuclear chicken. Well, maybe with some submarines it might be. Their submarine fleet hasn't been very active lately. It's a dangerous game. And if they're going to send ground troops over there, I mean, these volunteers like the guys they have in eastern Ukraine. Now, some of these guys are genuinely, you know, nationalist militias or biker gang types. But, you know, they're equipped by the Russian army. They're led by the Russian army officers. They're beams and bullets come from the Russian army. So let's not pretend that they're not Russian troops. And most of them are Russian troops supposedly on vacation on their own time. Their parents don't say the same thing necessarily when the body bags come home. But that's dangerous, too. And as you mentioned, you know, if they're going to be there on the ground, you know, presumably over in western Syria, pretty far away from where the U.S. is targeting, but in a world where the U.S. can bomb a hospital in Afghanistan by mistake, anything can happen, and that's dangerous.
But, you know, it's so well established and has been so well established by recent history that getting involved on the ground in a place like Syria does no one any good. I just can't understand what Russia stands to gain from all this.
That's a good question. What they're, they're trying to prop up Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, the son of the longtime president, mm-hmm. Assad. And it looks like what they're trying to do is to set up a base over there on the Mediterranean coast, just again in the northwestern part of the country, where they can bolster his Alawite homeland. That's the area where his people are, the Alawites. It's an offshoot of Shia Islam. That's their stronghold. There's a mountainous area there. It's around Latakia, which is where the Russian air base is. It's around Tartus, which is where the Russian naval base is. Presumably they're there in case he has to leave Damascus. He has a safe place to go to, and Russia has some cards to play in the new Syria, whatever that turns out to be.
It all seems so, so sort of Cold War, so reminiscent of events of 40 and 50 years ago, doesn't it?
It does, except, for the most part, you know, there were a lot of proxy wars for sure, but for the most part, the Soviet Union and the United States kept their troops away from each other, except as you point out in those games where, you know, our submarines played tag with their submarines and occasional jets passed within a few feet of each other.
Part of it, I have to think, Neil, goes with that thing that's been going on in Russia for a long time, and we referred to it last week, which is just the wish to show up the U.S. in these international confrontations.
And right now, so far it's working, but as you say, if Russia gets sucked into this conflict in Syria, now presumably by calling them volunteers, you can withdraw them with, less... losing less face than you would if they were at, you know, acknowledged Russian forces. But nobody's going to be fooled by this. If you had to put, where it ends is it's a good guess. I mean, some people say, you know, Putin's playing a long game. But as you say, a lot of people say, you know, where does this come out well for Russia in the future? In the United States, President Obama can be deeply criticized for a lot of things. And a lot of people say he should have gotten more involved in Syria from the beginning. A lot of people say if they had established a no-fly zone even as long as, you know, a month ago, that would have precluded the Russians from coming in. He's been very reluctant to get drawn into the conflict in Russia and extremely reluctant to send ground troops even into, the role of forward air controllers in Iraq, calling in aircraft specifically on ISIS targets. He's been very reluctant to do that.
Well, I would think that there would be every likelihood if we'd gotten involved a couple of years ago that we'd be in a worse mess now. Isn't that one of the possibilities?
Oh, that's absolutely one of the possibilities. And, you know, it's a lot of the things that people say is, you know, you can't, it's a little hard to point out, you know, the messes that statesmen avoid, like getting involved in a ground war in Syria. But that's one of the things that President Obama and his supporters repeatedly talk about. And I think that's one of the things I think that's going to be coming up in the presidential campaign, that Hillary Clinton or whoever it is who's running on the Democratic side is going to be talking about.
You know, one of the things that the story brings up is the whole this so-called volunteer army makes me wonder how many of the military forces around the world are really sort of these ragtag semi-affiliated groups that seem to be on the rise.
Yeah, and everybody's talking about this idea of hybrid warfare, which is what Russia is accused of running in Ukraine, where you have, you know, sort of plausible deniability. Well, they were just volunteers. These were guys on their own time from the Russian army. And no, it wasn't us. It wasn't our piece of equipment that shot down that Malaysian airliner. But, you know, so you can sort of creep up and see what the reaction is and then creep a little further and see what the reaction is. What's going to be the reaction when Russian troops are in eastern Ukraine? What's going to be the reaction if they take that port on the Black Sea, Mariupol? What's going to be the reaction if they push even further towards Odessa, which a lot of people think is their ultimate goal there? And the same thing in Syria. They can push a little farther, Same thing that China seems to be doing in the South China Sea. If China's ships are bullying its neighbors' ships, it's not a Chinese warship that does it. It's a Chinese Coast Guard ship that does it. So, you know, it's playing this right up to the edge.
You know, Neil, you can add hybrid warfare to this list of sinister euphemisms that seem to crop up in areas like this.
And absolutely. And you know, again, volunteer forces. Yeah. I mean, there are, I guess, you know, to be fair, a couple of Americans fighting against ISIS with some of those Syrian refugee groups. But this is, you know, a handful of people, and it's not certainly not being supplied or directed by the United States of America.
It's getting scary out there, Neil. Thanks very much for taking the time.
My pleasure, Chris.
Neil Conan is a regular contributor to HPR with Pacific News Minute as part of his ongoing radio career, which now originates from his Hawaii Island macadamia nut farm. In this morning's backyard quiz, we focused our attention on a crustacean species recently spotted in Hawaii that was given its name in honor of musician and actor Sir Elton John. Discovered by Dr. James Thomas while researching remote coral reef systems in Raja Ampat, Indonesia, these crustaceans have been spotted in Kaneohe Bay, among other locations around the island, and are considered an invasive species. In Dr. Thomas's words, "I named the species in honor of Sir Elton John because I've listened to his music in my lab during my entire scientific career. So when this unusual crustacean with a greatly enlarged appendage appeared under my microscope after a day of collecting, an image of the shoes Elton John wore as the pinball wizard came to mind." It's currently thought that the species traveled to Hawaii as a hitchhiker inside a host sponge or tunicate that was attached to a large floating dry dock that was transported to the islands from Subic Bay in the Philippines. For today's quiz, we're hoping you could give us the scientific name of the Elton John crustacean species. And, of course, the answer is Lakotho eltoni.
Well, and we do have a winner, Sanjeem Aziz from Hilo on the Big Island. It is now 8:48, and that's today's quiz. If you have one, you can send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Achieve 3000, helping strengthen the school-home connection with Home Edition, an online tool with reading and writing tailored to each student's ability. Achieve3000.com/HawaiiParents.
Research has shown that pets help people live longer lives. Those who have their favorite furry friends, cats, dogs, bunnies, and more, know that sometimes they're the first ones to greet us at the end of a long day and can bring a much-needed smile with their silly antics. The Pet Hooey is a TV series that features compelling stories, health tips, and more, hosted by my next guest, Denby Dung. She's got three dogs at home in addition to her family and is here to tell us more about how pets have changed her lives for her life and those of her family for the better. Denby, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, Dr. Kozak. Thanks for having me.
You know, I mentioned all of the pets you have, and I know there's a bunch of family members in the house.
Yes.
But tell me more about the pets.
Okay, well, we actually have five.
Okay, it's
there's
grown.
There's been an update since
yes, okay.
the last time. So we adopted one from the Humane Society. That's Harley, and she was found on Waialua Beach. We have Whitewater, who is a home rescue. Stitch is my baby. He's the one I met when I first started hosting the Pet Hooey. And he was originally supposed to be a foster. Well, we know how that turned out.
Yes, you took him home.
We did.
Okay.
And then we had brother and sister Gage and Shiloh from the Big Y&I Rescue. And we were just trying to help foster them as well.
You know, foster doesn't really work for you,
does it? It really doesn't. Or it does.
It does, actually. It works better for the pets. So you now have five dogs. You have a dog pack.
We have a dog pack and a Yeah, with our human pack.
And are you the pack leader?
I'd like to think so, but I don't know.
Now, when you think of pets and what you're trying to do on the Pet Hooey, really what you're trying to do is help people to realize that pets make such a big part of our lives.
They do.
Tell me about what sort of things you talk about on the Pet Hooey.
Oh, we have lots of wonderful stories. Our main thing is to try to emphasize the bond about people and their pets. So we try to showcase some health tips and ways to help take care of your pets so that they can live longer, healthier lives. We also do extreme puppy makeovers where we take a dog from the Oahu SPCA or the any other one of the rescue organizations, and we take them around town to get a blow dry, a haircut, a little bit of a training session, and then we try to get them all prettied up for their new home and hopefully get them adopted. That's one of my favorite segments, sponsored by Aloha Kia. And we also do some wonderful pet stories. So a lot of people send in their stories about their stories with their ducks or their pigs or farm animals, you know, maybe not the typical pets, but wonderful stories that are interesting to our viewers.
Well, and it certainly sounds like, you know, although some people may think of ducks or pigs, for example, as not necessarily pets, when they do come into the home or become a pet, a lot of people feel they have a connection and a bond with that animal that they wouldn't otherwise necessarily have. And so it seems like people have such an affinity and such an affection for their pets here in the islands. And that's something that really comes out not only in your show, but also in when you see people bringing their dogs to dog parks or just kind of socializing their animals together. How do you manage with five dogs?
A lot of balance. Well, there are five people in my family right now.
So does everybody get assigned a pet?
Kind of. We like to take them to the different beaches, the dog parks. We take them out to events with us. There are a lot of pet events around town that we like to take them to. So they enjoy that. They love meeting other dogs and other people especially. So we just like to take them out and have a good time with them. We've recently been taking them to the beach a lot. And my Stitchy doesn't like to swim, but he likes to go to the beach. So he's learning.
Now, there are certain beaches here where they are pet friendly.
Yes, yes. And we feature them on our website. You can check it out at thepethooey.com. And we're always looking for new pet friendly places.
When people are thinking of adopting a pet, what would be some words of wisdom that, you know, having adopted five, what would be words of advice you would give them as far as what they should really anticipate and what joy they have to look forward to?
Well, you know, sometimes we encourage fostering first to see how things are going to work out. But
it worked out well for you.
Obviously. But also to be patient. I mean, you're both getting to know each other and you're getting to know the situation where you're living and the home and rules and boundaries. So just a lot of patience and a lot of love, because when you foster and when you adopt, I mean, just the amount of joy in your life. And I looked at, you know, we look at our dogs every day and we just realize how full they make our lives and how much love they can give us and how our hearts just feel overflowed with love. So there's so much good to come out of adoption and fostering. So we encourage it highly.
Do you find that a lot of the pets that you take around to have all the different beauty spa treatments, which sound pretty good, I'll go with the pet, do you find that a lot of them do get adopted?
Yes. Yes, we've had many, many success stories. And sometimes right during the filming, they'll meet somebody and the person will be like, I need to adopt that dog. So we did that the last time my sister Dana took one of their dogs out for Extreme Puppy Makeover.
And right then and there?
Right then and there, the dog got adopted.
Sometimes you just know.
Yes.
You know, and I think sometimes the pets know as well.
Yeah, there's that moment. Actually, when I met Stitch, the lady who brought him over to the show, she opened her trunk and he and I looked at each other. And I think that was just the moment we fell in love at first sight.
That was it.
That was it.
You carried him in your arms during the show and just kept walking right on home.
We were done. I said, you know, Stitch would make, well, his name was Jack at the time. I said, Jack would make the perfect dog for you. Or for me.
Do you have any plans to have any more pets?
I think we're capped out right now. But
you never know. Last time we talked, capped out was three. Now you have five. Yeah. Now, the pet Huey has been on for how long now?
Oh, geez, maybe 8 years, I think.
Okay, that's a long time and a lot of successful adoptions.
Yes, yes. Many, many successful adoptions. We're very proud of that.
Oh, well, that sounds fantastic. And I know that that's a show that also promotes health tips and just some good kind of information for pet owners of all different types of pets.
Yes, this is very true.
The oddest pet that anyone has ever featured on the show. Now I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, geez, oddest pet?
Most unusual.
Oh, we've had surfing pigs. We've had a lot of three-legged dogs, two-legged dogs even. I'm not sure the oddest.
Well, now we'll have to have you back. I'll have to let you think about that one.
Please have me back.
On the spot. Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kozak.
All right. The Pet Huey, hosted by Denby Dung, is a TV series that gives locals a chance to share their inspiring pet stories. Also find out tips on training, vet care, and more. You can find links to their website through ours at hpr2.org.
I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And I'm Bert Lum.
Next time on Bite Marks Cafe, we'll flash back to the magnitude 8.3 earthquake in Chile, which prompted officials to spin up emergency preparedness plans.
What information did decision makers use in predicting the size and impact of the tsunami? And how do recommendations reach the right people?
That's next time on Bite Marks Cafe, Wednesday at 5.
Kathy, you're a student of human behavior and a physician, and maybe you can tell me, why do animals seem to bring out the best in people?
You know, I think there's something about that connection with a pet where you really have to be fully engaged and present in the moment. Pets don't worry about last week and they don't worry about tomorrow. They just make you deal with living in the moment and just interacting with them on a one-to-one level. They know when you're playing around with your phone and trying to play with them. Nope, they want your full attention.
Well, they're never anything but in the moment, and that kind of constitutes an example for us who rarely are, right?
Good role model, yeah. Absolutely. When you worry so much about the future or dwell on the past, go play with a pet, because all you'll be able to do is throw a ball, play fetch, or play with some feathers in your cat. You can't multitask with that one.
I sort of like the sound of that. Thanks, Kat. Well, that's it for today. And up tomorrow, Neil Milner is going to be on hand to take the long view.
Plus, falling in love with the king, we'll talk with Elvis tribute artist Leo Days and hear about what it takes to be one of Hawaii's top MCs with Al Waterson.
We like to hear from you. You can call our talkback line and leave us your comments. Here's the number, 808-792-8217. You also can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Post comments on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation or tweet us at HI Conversation or at BKOZHPR.
If you missed any of this show or want a past one, find them on the HPR2 archive. Links to more information about guests and topics are there, too. Just look under Talk Shows for the conversation. I'm Kathy Kozak.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. Meet us in the morning for more of the conversation.